You guys, so I'm going on tour, and I'm going to be on tour for a while. First, it's just going to be weekends. A lot of it's weekends, so I'm still going to be able to pod. But yeah, then it gets crazy, February, March. And then anyway, all this to say, come see me if I come, if I'm near you, where you live. Where am I going? Denver, that sold out. Irvine. A lot of it sold out, but definitely check it. There's always some tickets to scrounge, I feel like. Then DC, then I don't know. We'll post it. I don't know where I am when. I'm in Atlantic City. I'm in DC. I'm in Atlanta. I'm in North Carolina, a couple places. I'm in Nashville. I'm in
Madison, Minneapolis, Detroit, Toronto, Vancouver, Seattle, San Francisco.
Fuck.
Nashville, Charlotte.
All damn places. New York City. We'll post it and there'll be like a link to get tickets in all in one place at some point soon. Yeah. So come see me. Come see me. Hey, everyone. It's your old pal, Sarah Silverman. And when I say old pal, I'm not old, but I'm like kind of old. And I went off birth control. My body's changing. My hormones are topsy-turvy. Anyway, topsy-turvy, whack-a-doodle. And, talked to my doctor, went to my OBGYN, figured it out. Everything is perfect now. But what I have to do is I shove this pill up my pussy like twice a week. And boy, everything's better, even better than better. Unfortunately, this product is called Vagifem. And I have to pick it up from my CVS way too often. You take two a week and only eight come in the box and it's prescription. Why it's prescription, I don't know. So I'm about to go on tour. So I go, listen, I need like, the doctor makes a million refills for it, but I go like, I need five boxes now. And she's like, well, we can't give you that many. I go, what is the rule on that? Is it, do you think I'm going to become addicted to Vagifem? I mean, they were lovely. I know everyone at my CVS because I go in to get prescriptions and it's my local CVS. I get my shit there, you know? But it's embarrassing. You know, I'm like, here I am again. I have to ask for it. They're like, what is it? You know what it is. Well, we have to know what you need. I go, you fucking know what I need. All right, Vagifem. Can we come up with a different, everything's called Zeljans or Xanax. Everything sounds like it's a name of a new planet. But, and then when it kind of comes to, even like dick pills is called Cialis or Viagra. I mean, yeah, we know what they mean now, but at least it's not called dick pills. It's not called like soft peen, you know? Like, fucking, come on. You can't call it something else, like, I don't know what. I don't know, Steve's pill. I told you I can't do him. I'm not a good improviser. I don't fucking care what it's called. Call it orange fluid. What? You guys, I'm not good at improvising. Orange fluid, that's worse, probably. I don't even know what that means. It's not a fluid or orange. I'm just trying to, like, have my mind say whatever there is to say, like, just improv. Yes, and. But all I came up with when I did that was Steve's pill and orange fluid, and neither of those are better than Vagifem. To be honest, both of those are better than Vagifem. God, I mean, my improvs were not creative, but they were more creative than Vagifem. It doesn't even, it's really wild too. It's like total waste of plastic, but the applicator is this very sleek, long, thin, almost like the Match Game microphone, like very thin. And at the end is almost like a two fingers pinching. And then there's literally a pill that looks like an oral pill you would take by mouth that the little fingers are holding. We should post what it looks like for people. I mean, not like it's going to be incredibly satiating or amazing, but it's so bizarre that that's what you put in. You put it in as far as it can go. It takes a lot of relaxing. And then it's just a little button, like a one inch. That's the sound it makes. And Rory likes to press the button. Sometimes I wake him up to do it. Hey, sorry, I know you've got work in the morning, but do you want to press the button? He's like, yeah. There you go on that.
You said put the pill in my pussy. Is that okay with you? It's just so graphic.
I mean, it's more graphic than up my vagina?
Yes. I don't know. When you said it, I was like, whoa. Anyways, just a note there.
You know what? It's so funny because pussy, as a teenager and a kid, whenever I first heard it, had so much power over me. It was like so obscene and so embarrassing, and I would never be able to say it, let alone like, I remember when I would masturbate as a child, I would just write the word pussy and look at it because it was like so dirty and titillating, but like shame filled, all those things. Now it's like, pussy.
Pussy.
Oh, yeah. That's a whole bit I had.
Your listeners, mm-hmm. It might be jarring. I don't know. I did a double take when you said it. I was like, oh, I did. When you're like, I put a pill in my pussy. I was like, Jesus.
I insert it. First of all, we're keeping all of this in.
Okay. Well, you can ask the boys how they felt.
Well, they laughed, I think. I don't know. They're both saying yes, but I, you know, I know it's very jarring and I'm not looking to jar. You know, I have listeners that call in and are like, oh, I love you so much, but every once in a while, you're so gross.
Okay,
and
that's
fine. I do want to be sensitive to that, but also I don't. I don't know. I just like exposure therapy, like normalize pussy.
It's like your weird thing where when you listen to NPR and like someone needs to take a sip, like when you're listening to it on a podcast, I think it's kind of similar in that way. So
I can't believe you're equating hearing the word pussy with hearing the disgusting, extremely upsetting sounds of a dry mouth on the radio.
So for some people, the word pussy or the word moist or some of those words are way worse than that.
Right.
Some people cringe at it. I'm just trying to think of others.
A lot of people cringe just at the word vagina.
True. So anyways, I'm just pointing it out. It's just something to think about. And then obviously I was going to mention plug the tour. So you already talked about it. Great.
Plug?
We'll mention it.
No, I know. I was just making a pussy. I don't know. I thought there was a connection
I'm
there.
I'm going to mute myself. Love you.
I love you more. Well, she's right. Pussy can be a word that makes people uncomfortable, and I do like to take in what affects people, but I can't, I mean, it's certainly, maybe it's a trigger word, but I'm not saying it's a trigger. Listen, it's pussy. I mean, I don't know what to tell you. I say normalize. That's what I say, but it's my, it is my podcast. I do want to be sensitive to people's feelings. You know, Amy was very jarred by it, and I'm sure she's not alone. Sorry. Gosh, that's really obnoxious, Sarah. I do have that instinct sometimes to press that button.
Okay. You said button.
Amy, that was unmute worthy for you. It is true, like, as I get a little older, I go, do people want to hear about me talking about my sex life or things or all these things that I'm open and talk about, not just on podcasts, but certainly in stand-up? Like, but I don't want to act off of fears I'm projecting onto others, not fears, feelings or disgust that I project onto others, which is very much the opposite of what we're just discussing, and yet very adjacent. Anyway, let's take some cowls, y'all.
You left me a message. Now I'm playing it for the world. Let's hear some voicemails.
So I caught the news this morning. I seen y'all got a lot of flash flooding out there. Hope you're all right, man. It's Elijah from Louisville. I'm still in this facility trying to mend my broken legs back together. Just checking on you. Love you.
Wait, who is that? Is that someone who calls in?
I don't think so. I think maybe he called once before. He's in rehab or for his physical, a leg situation. It was just curious about the storms. I thought, I don't know.
I know people talk like we know each other, but it seemed like he was like, hey, it's me. I'm still in rehab, mending my leg. I'm just like, now I'm worried about him. And like, I don't know who it is. He must have called in before. I'm sorry. You know, you should say like, hey, I'm called in about blah, blah, blah. Anyway, thanks for checking in. It's nice. And first of all, we needed the rain in Los Angeles. It was intense. It was a lot of rain. It was a lot of rain, but we were okay. Driving was a little nuts. It was just like very hard to see. But up north of here, Santa Barbara, something like that, they really got fucked, I think. But now it's dry and sunny and beautiful. And boy, we needed that rain. It's so crazy how lush everything is after it rains. It goes from a desert to just like green grass, blooms, trees. It's just wild. Rory always says it. It's crazy. Like, it's a desert, but you add water and shit grows. All right. Anyway, thanks for calling in. I hope your leg is better. What else?
Hi, Sarah. Love the podcast. My name's Rose, and I was listening to you speak about your wonderful friend Pat and her insurance woes. I work in the rehab industry for physical therapy and occupational therapy with geriatrics. Those commercials should be illegal. Joe Montana should not be up there telling these people what insurance to get because it is detrimental to them. The best insurance to have is just the pure Medicare government insurance. And then if you want, get a secondary. But these commercials need to go. Our elderly are being preyed upon by them, amongst other things. But I really am so thankful you brought that to light because I've never heard anyone else bring those commercials public. As you saw, it really put Pat in a tizzy about these insurances.
Yeah, they make it sound like it's an emergency.
It's just a shame. Well, I just wanted to make that statement, tell you how much I love you, and hope you have a great day. Thanks.
Oh, thank you, and thanks for calling in. Yeah, there's a special place in the hell I don't believe in for these people that take advantage of the elderly. It's disgusting. Between the insurance companies and these loan companies and the fucking miracle water guy who should just be in jail. Like, how is this not fraud? And all of these evangelists who are just evil. Wow. They drain vulnerable people, mostly the elderly, of their savings. I just cannot fathom. And these mega churches are, they're all tax exempt and they are stealing. These are basically real estate moguls stealing the savings of poor people and the elderly. They're pigs. It's just crazy. anyway.
Here's some ads.
Article. You know what I love doing? Nesting. And article's great when you're nesting. I love my chairs, my whole dining room set from Article. It still makes my heart sing. It's so pretty. And my guest bedroom bed, that mid-century bed frame that is so stunning. I love it so much. You know what? Article combines the curation of a boutique furniture store with the comfort and simplicity of shopping online. It's so good. And they're dedicated to a modern aesthetic of mid-century Scandinavian, industrial, and bohemian designs. An Article cuts out the middleman and sells directly to you, so there's no showrooms, no salespeople, no retail markups. Save up to 30% over traditional retail prices. Article is offering our listeners $50 off your first purchase of $100 or more. To claim it, visit article.com/Sarah, and the discount will be automatically applied at checkout. That's article.com/Sarah for $50 off your first purchase of $100 or more.
And we're back.
Hey, Sarah, it's your friend Toad from Pennsylvania. Hope that I can see you in Atlantic City when you come out later in the year.
Yes.
Can't find anybody to go with. Everyone's busy and stuff. So if anyone wants to platonically go with me and they're in the area, like the Lehigh Valley, let me know. Anyway, I saw you on the TV a couple times this week. You're on a TBS commercial. I guess you're going to do a show on TBS, or you're a guest host or something. And you're going to be the guest host of The Daily Show. I feel like you haven't talked about this, so maybe I missed it. I apologize if I missed it, but I'm super excited, and I hope it leads to more bigger opportunities for you. And as always, I love you.
Thank you. Yeah, I'll see you in Atlantic City. And if anyone out there, when am I in Atlantic City? I think it's pretty soon. It's like I want to say it's like February 4th. Let me look so I can, February 4th, I'm in Atlantic City. So if anyone is in that area and wants to go with another listener, I guess call in. And that would be such fun friendship matchmaking. And that I would want to meet you, I think, after the show. If you do, not to incentivize, I can't promise anything, but that sounds, I love that. I love the idea of a blind friendship date to see my show with two listeners. And yeah, smack dab in the middle of the tour, week of February 13th, I'm going to guest host The Daily Show. It should be fun. And it's so funny because Rory is working at JKL right now, at Jimmy Kimmel Live. And of course, that is my ex's show. And I'm going to do a week at The Daily Show, and his ex runs that show, is the executive producer showrunner of The Daily Show. So that's kind of funny. It's right up my alley, that shit. And I already am in love with her. but yeah, if anyone wants to go with this guy, call in. What's the name of this caller? He's called in before.
He said his name is Toad. I'm not making that up.
Yeah, I thought he said like Tobe, like Toby.
It may be something more reasonable.
But I think he did say Toad. All right, Toad, Tobe. If anyone wants to go with him, Atlantic City, yeah, February 4th. Call in. I'd get a kick out of that. All right, what else?
Hi, Sarah. My name's Angela. I'm from Melbourne, Australia. I love listening to your truth-telling nasal tone.
How dare you?
I'm a bit concerned about injectables. I have to get it for my job because it's very much based on how I look. However, I am using it to fuel my university degree that I'm doing concurrently. I hate to generalize, but how do I do that without sounding like a jerk? But I just see all these women, especially lots of young women as well, lining up outside these Botox clinics. It's concerning for me as I have a young daughter. I bring the same topic up with men and they just snub their nose at it. They've got better things to do. They're more functional. They're out like
doing the work. We have better things to do.
I just hate to think that men have, well, not men specifically, but women have just spend so much time and money on how they look. And it's very much, I worry about that it's a bit too much and men are just out there doing what they want, you know, making things happen, and women are just in this bubble now, just that's their major one concern. And I'm concerned about it. Anyway, I want to know your thoughts. How can we equal this up a bit? How can we give some more power back to females? Because I just feel like getting injectables, being concerned with how you look, takes away a lot of your freedom, a lot of your power. It keeps women small, essentially, is how I see it. Anyway, yeah, let me know. Thanks.
Yeah, well, this is because women are punished for aging. You know, we are scoffed at for not dying. I don't like how my jawline is getting soft. I don't like how my neck is aging and stuff like that. And it's just so boring and consuming, and I just don't want to take it on. Like, the best advice I got from my shrink was look in the mirror less. Just stop. I love using a cream. I love a facial oil. I love serums because I love a nighttime and morning routine. So that works for me. But the lasers and the Botox and the injectables, all of that is based on it's injuring your body. Like those lasers and stuff, I'm not against it. I'm just saying, I don't like stuff that injures your body. It's all stuff that injures your body because it's your body's it's your body healing from being injured that gives you that new looking skin and collagen. So it's very dark. Yeah, I'd love to look young forever. I'd love that, but it just really skeeves me out. And that shit is really painful, by the way. It's like, I've not never done it. It fucking hurts. And I was like, I'm not participating in this and hurting myself for you. Like, oh my God. I mean, sometimes I've seen people that look fucking great, but ironically, these processes don't seem to age very well. Like, you get that pillow face, right? I just remind myself who the most beautiful women are as they age. The Diane Keatons, the Helen Mirrens, the British women really have it. Like, the British actresses I see as they age, they're really doing it right. Like, they're just aging. Like, what do you think? You're going to inject yourself with shit and then, like, play a 20-year-old? Like, the best thing you can do as an actor is look your age and be able to play those ages. Anyway, but the Judi Dench's and Harriet Walter and Fiona Shaw. Ooh, I'm loving Mimi Rogers lately, her beautiful wrinkles on Bosch Legacy. I mean, it's very nice and certainly well-meaning when people say, oh my God, you don't look your age at all. I know that they mean well and it makes me feel nice, but why can't I look my age? Why can't being 51 look like this? Why is it insulting to look my age? I'm lucky. I have good genes. Plus, I don't drink, which I think are two very helpful things, but I don't know if the solution is men also doing that shit or making men feel like they need to do that stuff. I think the solution is reframing what we see as beautiful and what we see as worthy. I don't know. All right, what else?
Hi, Sarah. My name is Ethan. I am a gay Jewish man, and I have been with my partner for 22 years. We've never felt the need to formalize it with marriage, although now for different reasons, we've decided to make it formal in a legal ceremony. Unfortunately, my partner's brother is a Catholic priest, which means that he says he will not be able to attend at all. Not the service, not the reception. And I find this very disconcerting. And my partner is standing by him and said this is his, not even just his beliefs, it's what he's required by through his bishop and diocese. He's, you know, and to me, this is very offensive, very offensive. And Baba Booey to y'all.
Yeah, look, it's a real bummer. I feel sad for the brother-in-law and sad for your partner. I mean, geez, that's just heartbreaking, but this is what is. I mean, Would you rather have his brother, knowing how he feels about your very existence, be there at your wedding and your reception? It's unfortunate that he sees himself as having no choice. Of course he has a choice. Does he truly ask himself, what would Jesus do, and get this answer? I can't imagine. But religion is rife with hypocrisy and hatred, oddly. There are absolutely churches and priests who embrace the LGBTQ community. There's also a lot of shame in the priest community. I cannot tell you how many gay friends I have who have dated priests who are on the down low. It's like a real shame, and also oddly common. But yeah, it's all about shame. How much homophobia is about the homophobic's own shame? I'd say a lot. So, you know, love your husband to be, and don't blame him for not fighting this. Plus, you do not need that energy on your special day. So good. I'm glad he's not going to be there. It's a damn shame, but, you know, I don't think you'd want him there with what he believes to, like, put that on your special day about your love. You know, on that day, you deserve to be around people who love and support you. You both do. I'm sorry, and it's unfortunate, but don't let it hinder your happy day for you or your partner, you know? All right. Mazel. What else?
Hi, Sarah. It's Jake calling from New Zealand, living in Australia, calling from Sydney. And I'm just, you know, I'm a comedian, and I've been talking a lot with a lot of my comic friends just about envy and its place in the industry, and how I think, regardless of whether you're a comedian, I think anywhere in any industry, envy is a part of life. And I, you know, I'm 37, and I feel like I really don't give in to envy a lot of the time, but it's such an interesting emotion for me. And it's something that I kind of always imagined once I turned, like, you know, 18, I'd stop feeling, and I'd be like, I'm happy with me, you know. But I find that it's more of like it's more of an up and down kind of squiggle graph of how I feel. And if I'm feeling bad about myself, I'm more likely to feel envy. But
right.
I just kind of wanted your thoughts on how do you manage envy, and how have you managed envy in your life and in your career and in your everything? Because it's something that I feel like we don't talk about enough. And it's almost taboo. I mean, in the comedy world, definitely, it's almost taboo to even discuss it. And I find discussing it makes me feel more able to handle it. So
yeah.
I just wanted your thoughts, because, you know, we're all just people, and I trust you and believe you. So I, yeah, thank you. Love you.
I would say that envy is a wildly human trait. And, you know, Nick Swartzen, years ago, I remember him at Largo, the old Largo, doing an impression of two comedian friends. And one of them says, "Oh my God, I just booked a pilot." And the other one goes, "Oh, I gotta fire my agent." You know? So yeah, it's natural, but I don't know that it behooves you. Mr. Rogers says something like, and I'm gonna totally bastardize this, but certainly the idea behind it will be clear to you. He says something like, "You're unique. There's nobody else in the whole world like you. You're the only one qualified to be you, and I like you just the way you are." And what I take from that is you can absolutely be happy for your friends in the same field as you. They aren't taking anything from you because they can't be you. There is room for everyone. Your job is to be funny in a way that only you can. You know, women in comedy were pitted against each other for a really long time because we were told that there was ever only one slot for us on any given show. And we finally rejected it because it's bullshit. I mean, look at comics that thrive. Look at Chelsea Handler. She's killing it. She's at the top of her career. She's wildly successful. And she is a massive champion for other women comics. she's been a champion for comics forever. When she got her E! Show, she made it so that she filled it with other comics and depended on them to be as funny as possible. She could have been jealous. She could have been worried they would take her spotlight. They'd be better than her, but she wasn't. And it never hurt her. It only, she made so many careers came out of that show on E! And did it hurt her at all to raise them up? No. She once got a Super Bowl ad for T-Mobile. And she brought me into it. She didn't have to do that. She could have just done a whole Super Bowl ad for herself and made a shit ton of money. But she asked if she could bring me on, and they said yes. And I mean, I don't get Super Bowl commercials. You know, it's not, it was a fucking gift. I'm in awe of her and how she does life, you know, and you know what? It's not, this is so trite, but it really, really isn't a race. It's a marathon. I know that's like such a trite thing to say, but it's true. People are going to do better than you. You're going to do better than others. Someone's going to get a show and be popular on it, and you don't. And then 10 years later, you do. You know, things don't ever come too late. They can come too early, but they don't come too late. And everyone who is funny can win at this game, you know, called comedy. You just have to know what winning is. You know, if you're a jealous, envious person and you don't keep it in check, no level of accomplishment is going to feel like success to you. It's going to satiate you because that shit's inside of you. You know, envy is human. It doesn't get more human than that. But keep it in check because most of the time that feeling is it's your own ego and it's going to hold you back. If not professionally, yeah, there are plenty of toxic, successful, famous comedians who are miserable and riddled with jealousies. But if not that, in terms of your very soul and your happiness on this fucking planet in outer space, keep that shit in check. I promise you. We all have ego, but being aware of it or during a jealous fit or after it, reflecting and going, oh boy, that's just me being insecure. It's just me being, you know, I don't know. It's, you know, my therapist gave me an exercise to do that's about ego. And all it is to walk down the street or drive down the street. And as you observe the things around you, only observe them. Don't let yourself, you know, the human brain goes, without realizing, you'll go, oh, that guy with the green hat, that green hat doesn't look good on him, or I wouldn't wear that. Or there's all these like little judgments attached to how we take in what we see. And that's ego. So it's a great exercise to just observe the things around you with no judgment. It's a weird exercise, but it strengthens that muscle of reject, you know, keeping ego in check. We need ego. We need a ego to a degree, but that's a great exercise to just kind of understand how it finds itself in all the different parts of our lives where it doesn't help us. All right. What else?
Hi, Sarah. My name is Jonathan, and I have a question. So I feel like a lot of celebrities don't talk about it. What is media training? Have you had it? What does it look like? Where is it at? I've been watching a lot of Millie Bobby Brown interviews, and I'm just so in awe of how well spoken she is, and you know how she could carry a conversation so flawlessly, and I could have never done that at her age. Is this something that's available for us non-celebrities. Okay, bye.
As far as I'm aware, that is an entirely on-the-job training thing. You know, I was never taught how to be on TV or, I mean, you can take classes, you know, acting classes and things like that. But like media training, I think I have heard of media training in terms of executives. I think take classes like that too, because they need to learn how to speak publicly or speak to big boardrooms of people. And a lot of people who do media training, like executives and business people like that, will take like an improv class or, and because it helps them, any kind of public speaking class. I think that's what that is. There are like acting classes or like acting for film classes or audition classes. There's stuff like that for everyone. But I'm not, I was not, I did not receive media training. But yeah, you know, like we live in a world where everyone has their own channel, basically, with social media. And there's so much to learn about the digital space. But as in terms of like doing press and stuff, that's like a, as far as I know, a figure it out as you go kind of thing and glean what you can from those who come before you. Not a good answer. There you go. Not the best question, though, in my defense. No, it was certainly, it was a completely fine question. What else?
Hey, Sarah. My name's Sophia. I'm from Canada, and I've been listening to your podcast for the last couple months. It got me through a very hellish semester. I'm in college. I'm a little bit high right now. And I was making a snack. You've talked about you perfected like the vegan popcorn, and I used your like popcorn popping trick to get all the kernels, and it worked. I don't think there's any unpopped kernels, so thank you for that.
The best.
I just wanted to tell you, you should try putting a little bit of truffle oil on your popcorn. It's vegan. It is super good. Also, what is your favorite fast food? That's it. Thanks so much for making such a cool podcast. Love you. Mwah. Bye.
My favorite fast food, by the way, truffle oil, that sounds interesting. Like you put it in like a little spray bottle, spray it on. Oh, isn't that expensive? I don't know. I mean, you know, I'm a woman of means. I can afford it. I was just curious. My favorite fast food is French fries. I mean, not to be generic. I like the skinny, like McDonald's style, especially if they come extra crispy French fries. Oh my God, that's what I want right now. You know what else? I also have a weakness for like a Coke with ice and a straw that you would get at a fast food. I try not to use, I bought metal straws, but that fucking cup of ice with a Coke and a straw, is there's something about it. Oh my God, I love it. But if I, I just, you know, listen, I don't want the straw to end up in a turtle's nose. So I did buy a bunch of metal straws and I love them. But, and people get so mad at paper straws, but like, whatever, use it until it's soggy and then use another one. I do have some like plastic straws in a drawer that I just got from like takeout or this and that. And then if I use those, when I throw them out, I cut them down the long way and then cut them in tiny pieces into my recycling, because I don't want it to end up in a turtle's nose. What else?
Hi, Sarah. My name's Steve, and I'm a longtime fan. I worked at the Arclight in Hollywood for 15 years until it closed, and I ran into you several times. For your listeners who might not know, the Arclight was the best movie theater in L.A. before we went bankrupt because of the pandemic. They say you shouldn't meet your idols, but every time I encountered you, you were the sweetest person. You always made my day. Aww. I digress. I've heard you talk about how important sleep is to you because you have an active dream life. I keep a dream journal and found that writing the dream down, yes, it's a pain because you have to do it immediately after you have the dream, but it's so worth it. I don't write them all down, just the ones that are striking, so maybe once every week or two. Thanks to my journal, I can look back on those dreams and recall them as vividly as memories of things that actually happened to me in waking life. Sometimes my beloved father, who passed away a few years ago, appears in my dreams, and those visits are like new memories added to the ones I already have of him. But of course, they're bittersweet because I have to wake up to reality in which he's no longer alive. By the way, for those who don't remember their dreams, keeping a journal by your bed will help you recall them. My question is, do you keep a dream journal? And if not, have you considered it? I love everything about you, and listening to your podcast is one of the highlights of my week. I love you so much. Bye.
Aw. I don't keep a dream journal, but I have had dreams where I wake up and write it all down and journal my dreams. I don't want to bore you with them, but they're, I think what affects me by the ones that I wake up and must write down is that it's, they were so vivid, you know, and I have a lot of recurring maps, not recurring dreams, but recurring, like New York City always looks the same in my dreams, but it doesn't look anything like the real New York City. It's just, that's New York City when I'm dreaming. It's a completely different map. And I know it. It's so weird. I had a dream once. I was recovering from coming out of the hospital. So I was having really like very lucid dreams. And I was really emotional because I was on medicine that makes you like very weepy and like everything you feel, it all feel, it's all too much, you know, like, and I must have told this story, but I woke up from a dream that was so moving. I was like sobbing and it was so beautiful. And I won't tell the whole dream because it's excruciatingly boring for people to hear people's dreams. But the end of the dream ends with this young boy who's with his grandfather who says, I mean, and it's the most beautiful dream. And the kid goes, I mean, have you ever thought about green cellophane? I wonder where they make it. Wouldn't it be neat to go to a factory where they make it? And I wake up and I'm so moved from this dream that I get this idea that, and I've probably told the story, but I get this idea that I'm going to order online green cellophane and I'm going to look when I get it and see where it's manufactured, and wherever it is, I'm going to buy a plane ticket and go there. And so I ordered green cellophane and it came in the mail, and I open it up and I look on the box to see where it's manufactured, and it's made in Camden, New Jersey. I went, oh, yeah, I'm not going to go there. It's okay. Well, yes, the arc light's the best. And I'm so glad that your experiences with me were good, because I was stoned 100% of those times. So I wasn't sure if I may or may not have been my best self. Also, our good friend Jonah Ray worked there way back when. And it was always fun to go and get him as the announcer at the beginning and cheer him on. And with that, Dad, we are winding down. Now is the moment in the show where I say subscribe, rate, and review wherever you listen to podcasts, and check us out on YouTube if you like watching. Wink, wink. Bye.
Hey!
Hey, I wanna...
Hey!
Bye!
Hey, ya fucker!